think we should probably get started and fill people in as they get on the call. Why don't I have everyone say their name just for the record?
This is Jonas Schwartz from the Health and Human Services Commission.
Amy Granberry.
Paula Margison.
Tony Green. Great. All right. And I'm Ashley Schweiker, and Elizabeth Yevich should be joining us shortly from TDHCA. So the first item, and we can leave this, if you guys want to, till the end of the call when we may pick up another person or two, was the appointment of committee chair. Do you guys want to table that till the end?
That's fine.
All right. Why don't we wait on that one just in case we pick up a couple more people as we go along. All right, well then the second item of business for the Services Committee is the discussion of the 2012-2013 biennial budget. And I apologize for the lateness of the email that I sent this morning regarding the budget, but I wanted to give you all a sense of the way that everything is broken out. And did everyone receive that email that I sent this morning?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So basically, I'll just quickly go over it, that this is a work in progress budget because it was created in August for the state fiscal year 2012 starting September 1, but we actually had a loss of our staff member Suzanne Hemphill in November, and because of that, actually have some changes to make to the budget categories. I think we just had someone else join us.
Yeah, this is Steve Ashman sitting in for Mark Gold. Sorry I'm late.
That's okay, Steve. We're just going over the budget document that I sent out this morning.
Okay.
And so given that we've had a change to our staffing, you know, this budget will be amended. But what I wanted to give everyone a sense of was that there is a budgeted total, meaning a total of costs that are existing currently, and then there is what I called an unbudgeted total, meaning that amount of money which the council can make recommendations on how we should spend that to further the efforts of the council. And so, as I said at our December 5th council meeting, that amount is roughly $100,000 for fiscal year 2012 and will be $100,000 for fiscal year 2013 as well. So the item on the agenda in terms of discussion of the biennial budget was to give you guys an opportunity to provide any recommendations on the use of this funding. And the Housing Issues Committee met last Wednesday, and I wanted to share with you all, they had two recommendations which were housing related that they wanted to put forward, but I wanted to share them. So the first one that they had was to utilize the available funding to procure a consultant that would make recommendations to the governing boards of TDHCA and TSHAC regarding potential modifications to the policy documents which direct the use of our housing tax credit and multifamily bond program funding, which would increase the creation of service-enriched housing. So basically that they wanted a consultant that either has experience with or would research the qualified allocation plans and other policy documents that other states have used to create service-enriched housing, whether that be through special set-asides or points within the scoring criteria of these documents, and to make recommendations to the board on ways that we could amend our current policy documents for that purpose. So that was one recommendation they made. And a second recommendation that the Housing Committee made was to utilize the funds towards some type of capacity building or technical assistance for nonprofit organizations that already have a mission to help the population that the council looks to help, but want to create service-enriched housing and haven't done so yet. So basically those who already serve people with disabilities and the elderly, but are lacking the knowledge to move forward with the development of service-enriched housing to provide them that capacity building and technical assistance. So those were the recommendations of the Housing Issues Committee, and I wanted to open it up to the Service Issues Committee to make their own recommendations that I can type up and have ready for the whole council to discuss and vote on.
Ashley, this is Steve Ashman, and I've got a question.
Yes.
One is relating to the overall budget, and then then I've got another question about the housing.
Okay.
And the potential use of the unbudgeted total. Is the $128,000 include the salaries for all three positions, or did you reduce that because of the resignation or transfer of that one individual?
Oh, yes. So what I was saying at the very beginning was that this was created in August of 2011 to prepare for the beginning of the state fiscal year on September 1st. And at that time, we did still have Suzanne Hemphill as a staff member. So the salary amount that hasn't been changed to reflect the loss of that staff member. So currently, that salary level reflects myself, Suzanne, and a portion of the director, Elizabeth Yevich's salaries. So that would be amended if we're not, you know, replacing Suzanne. So that's where that comes from.
Because your original budget showed three, it was for three staff.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's, you know, currently I think that's something that's in limbo as well. So like I said, this is just a, as of September 1, what we were looking at and. You know, I think that's something that there's a possibility could change over time, but I think what TDHCA Financial Administration is telling me is that this is the amount we have for budgeted and unbudgeted currently.
So if you invest the $100,000 on projects, you essentially eliminate that other position?
No.
So you're fully budgeted for all the staff you need?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Elizabeth just joined.
Hi, this is Elizabeth. And who is this?
This is Steve.
Hey, Steve. I thought that was your voice. Good morning.
Yeah. So the answer would be that we're going to continue on with the staff that we have. And so I think that we're willing to put out the unbudgeted total of $100,000 for the council to make recommendations on.
Okay, and the other question I had related, and you're really going to have to refresh me on this, but didn't the enacting legislation require some analysis between the Health and Human Services Department and TDHCA on inconsistencies in rule or statute for development of service-enriched housing?
The statute states that that the council and council staff, one of their duties statutorily is to identify barriers to the creation of service-enriched housing, and that those barriers could include administrative, financial, and coordination. So is that what you were referring to?
Well, actually, I thought it was more specific to look at existing rule and programs and rules to look for inconsistencies, but I think it's close to meaning what I thought it meant. And that being so, is that part of anybody's recommendation that we have so far, and I don't think so, of looking at, this enterprise's rules and policies and programs versus PDHCA's to identify those barriers?
Okay, so researching the administrative rules and requirements that may be actually at cross purposes between state agencies that would hamper the development of service enriched housing.
Yeah, there may be impediments to development of service enriched housing.
Okay.
I throw out the suggestion if that's what the legislation says, because I think we want to do everything we can to comply with that law.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with you. Does anyone else have any comments regarding that recommendation?
I think it's a good recommendation. Ashley, I do have one question.
Yes.
Do you know yet if you're going to be able to replace Suzanne's position?
That's Jonas, right?
Yes.
Right. I don't think so at this time.
Okay.
Right. So that's more stepping in, you know, overseeing it. So I think this was, I think Ashley's certainly proven she is more than capable of running this on her own and with my oversight. And I think that's the way it will remain for right now.
Okay.
Okay. Any other thoughts on the recommendation that Steve made?
Just restate it, would you?
Sure. So it's given that the statute asks us to try to overcome barriers to the creation of service-enriched housing, and those barriers could include administrative barriers. I think what Steve was saying is that maybe looking into the types of rules, requirements that different state agencies that are on this council have, which may be cross purposes with one another, and maybe when looking at them together, create a barrier to the creation of service-enriched housing.
But would that require the expenditure of additional funds, or would that be something that would just fall within, you know, the purview of staff and maybe certain people on the council who have connections to that kind of information?
I think it's up to you guys, because, you know, I what we were, you know, trying to get at with this funding is something that would be above and beyond the duties and the time that staff and council can put into the work of the biennial plan. And so there is obviously the opportunity to use this funding if we wanted to hire an outside vendor to do the work, if that's what we want to do, or if we feel as though that work could be accomplished without the hiring of some type of outside vendor, then no, we wouldn't have to use the funding for that purpose.
And this is Steve again. The only reason I mention it is because it ties into the first recommendation from the Housing Committee. You could hire a consultant to make recommendations to TSHAC and TDHCA for changes in various types of plans, but if we've got inconsistencies administratively, we've got a problem.
I agree, and I think that this is a good recommendation, and I think it would give us some valuable information as we move forward.
Could maybe the same consultant accomplish both tasks? Is that a possibility?
I think that's what Steve was saying, that maybe it would just be one outside contractor, one side outside staff person to do both.
That makes sense.
So do you think you could find a consultant who would be able to not only identify the barriers, but also determine inconsistencies between agency rules? It sounds like that would require an awful lot of expertise.
Donnie, you have a good point, because, you know, we've got, you know, five enterprise agencies, it's a pretty complex set of rules and policies and procedures.
And perhaps it would work as a three-step process where the consultant would develop recommendations which would be fed back to the council, and then the representatives from the state agencies would look at those and determine any barriers in terms of rules and then forward that information back to the consultant. Unless you could find someone who has hands-on knowledge of all the agency's rules, which, again, I think is asking a lot.
Okay. One thing that the Housing Committee was very clear on in terms of their recommendation, budget recommendation, was that any of the research and findings and then recommendations that the vendor came up with for the changes to the funding criteria for the housing program would be made to the governing boards of TDHCA and TSHAC. And I know, and I just want to see, are you guys thinking that that this vendor would be making their recommendations to the council or to an administrative body?
And this is Steve. The council, through you folks, are hiring this contractor to work on our behalf, so we'd be reviewing that and editing that and making, you know, reviewing it prior to going to government boards, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I would think it would come as a recommendation from our body, our council, to the governing board of the different entities.
Yeah, I would think that the board would want the data massaged, well, reviewed, mm-hmm. And massaged before being asked to take action on it. I think it's a great recommendation. I think that's where our focus needs to be. I also like the recommendation about capacity building, but looking at the funds that are available, and I'm not familiar with the costs of actually hiring a consultant to help an organization with capacity building, but it seems to me that we could burn up that money very quickly, that chances are no more than one or two organizations could benefit from that. And I think it would be unwieldy going through some kind of a competitive procurement process to select an individual or two. And I'm just not seeing the bang for the buck. I think really focusing on the policy side is a better investment, because it has the potential to benefit several different projects instead of one only. And even if you do, you know, build capacity with an organization or two, there's no guarantee that its plans will come to fruition. I mean, there are just so many spurious variables. And then my last comment is that I would also like to see some money carved out to further the training goals. I don't think there needs to be a lot of money invested, but I would like to have us talk about setting aside at least a few thousand dollars to allow someone from TDHCA to educate service providers about housing services and vice versa. And I know we've talked about electronic materials, and there's negligible cost with that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I would like to see some money set aside for travel or perhaps printing to, you know, once the educational materials have been developed, to disseminate those to folks who might not have ready access to Internet.
And Donnie, I totally love your recommendation. There is something, an opportunity that has come up recently that may take care of that. The DADS had applied for some CMS administrative funding through the Money Follows the Person demonstration, and obviously Steve, the expert, can tell you much more about that. But as I understand it, a portion of that funding that was granted to DADS is actually going to be given to TDHCA for the hiring of a few FTEs, and one of the main responsibilities for at least one of those FTEs is going to be that kind of training, education, and outreach. So we are right now crafting the job description hopefully in the near future we will be hiring that position. But yes, that position, what they're supposed to be doing, they're supposed to be traveling all around the state and educating local communities and service providers about what are the housing funding opportunities in their areas and through the Texas Department of Housing. So I'm hoping that your recommendation, which I think is completely in line with what the council has wanted to do, may be fulfilled through this new funding.
And that's great. If sufficient funds are available from other sources, go for it. But again, my personal bias is to go with expenses that would lead to more systemic changes rather than assist an agency or two.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I couldn't agree more with Donnie's whole recommendation. I think by analyzing the policies, that will set us up to go very, very far into the future with making service-enriched housing a reality, because your policies all have to work together at the very beginning if the services on the ground are going to work for people.
Right. Okay, great. And what I will do is I will certainly write up all of the recommendations that you have made and send you guys a draft for any tweaking. Are there any other budget recommendations that have not yet been stated? All right.
I think Jean wants coffee and cookies.
Yeah, Mike Goodwin last week said that there was no donut fund that we made available to him. He was upset about that. Yes, sorry about that, guys. I appreciate those the recommendations that you guys have given, and I will certainly I'll try to do my best to summarize them in the best form possible, and we'll move those forward to our next council meeting. Okay, great. So, moving on to the discussion of the online discussion forum that we had. As you all received on December 5th, there was a document that you all received at our December 5th meeting called the, let's see, what did I call it? The 2012-2013 Biennial Plan Online Discussion Forum Responses. Long title. And at the meeting on the 5th, what we decided was for our next steps in order to respond to the discussion forum and what the public provided to us in that discussion forum, that we would take the items that we received to our committees. And so on that last page of the document that I provided to you was the summarizing of the main issues that the stakeholders gave us into committee, broken down by committee. So let me just to reiterate for those of you who maybe weren't at the December 5th meeting, or just as a refresher, the three main items that we've received that are service related. The first one was to provide a greater array of housing options for persons with mental illness and persons with intellectual or developmental disabilities, and that included integrated housing and person-centered planning. The second item was providing comprehensive service funding that included the discussion of Medicaid waiver services for persons with mental illness. It also included discussion of community-based prevention and early intervention services for this population. And then the third recommendation was to provide greater education to legislators, property managers, and the general public to prevent and combat discrimination. So those are the main pieces of feedback that we received that were service related and that we stated would be brought to this committee. So what I wanted to do is start to have a discussion to flush out these items, these three items back on in terms of how do we want to tackle them for the biennial plan. So are there ones that this committee would consider a priority? Are there ones that you want me to do more research on and specific issues that we want to flush out for the biennial plan? So I'm just turning that over to you guys, and I don't know if do we want to take them one by one? Anyone?
That sounds like a good approach to me.
Okay. Great. So the first one was the providing a greater array of housing options for persons with mental illness and persons with intellectual or developmental disabilities, including integrated housing and person-centered planning.
Actually, there's some work going on with the with part of this issue through House Bill 2725 that passed at the last session.
Okay.
And we're looking at developing some additional service options through a new Medicaid option that provides waiver-like services to individuals with disabilities through the state plan, the Medicaid state plan, rather than your traditional waiver. So we're looking at pieces of this.
Okay. That sounds great. Is there any information that I could get or someone I could talk to that's working on that implementation of that bill?
Yeah, I would talk to Dina Stoner with the Department of State Health Services.
I will certainly talk to Dina. And can I ask, is this for a specific disability population?
Specifically individuals with mental health disabilities.
Okay. All right.
So, Jonas, it's going to be a Medicaid waiver that...
No, it's going to provide... The 1915I is a fairly new provision in Medicaid law that allows a state to provide waiver-like services as part of a state plan rather than in a Medicaid waiver. The benefit to that is they then become entitlement services if it's a state plan service and not just a straight waiver service. So the legislation that passed directed us to do a study to look at developing state plan services for individuals with mental illness.
So can you loop that back to housing for me and tell me, you know, how would that flesh out?
Well, I mean, you know, so many times people with mental illness, when they're getting out of their inpatient treatment, they need a place to live.
Right.
So.
But so are we talking more about subsidy certificates or actual housing construction, housing set aside? What?
No, we're talking more about, you know, existing, like using Section 8 resources or other types of services, other types of housing. What we're looking at, though, is are the services available so to allow them to be successful once they get to the community?
Yeah, it sounds like you're saying that this would provide a community-based service provision for persons with mental illness that is currently not available.
You got it exactly.
Okay, so this is more about the services to sustain the person.
Yes, but Paula, I mean, part of the discussion that we're having is a person has to have a place to live.
Exactly.
So, but it's not focusing just on the housing piece. It's focusing on that is one component. We're looking more at the services piece.
But I definitely see the tie-in because I think one of the major barriers that we've heard feedback on during the last biennial planning process and this one is that for persons who are eligible for the current 1915C Medicaid waivers, that they are able to utilize those waivers in a community-based setting, which allows them stability when it comes to living in the community, and you know, tying that with their housing means that they're not as at risk for institutionalization. So it sounds like we're trying to provide that same level of stability through community-based services for persons with mental illness.
That is correct, Ashley. The one difference here is by using the 1915I vehicle, you don't have the waiting list element that we have for other, for just regular 1915 fee waivers.
Okay. Good.
But my concern would be in all of that, the actual, you know, housing stock or housing options that might be available to those individuals so that they would even be in a place to get the services.
Well, I mean, then that's part of, Paula, that's part of what the study's looking at, because this bill directed us to do a study and report back to the legislature.
So, Paula, you're saying your concern is that there may not be those housing options currently in place in the community?
Right.
Okay. Well, that's something that is a great place to start with in terms of trying to research into and meet this idea of a greater array of housing options for persons with mental illness is to look into that. So, and any other feedback on housing options for that population?
Does anybody know if the Fountain House program is still operable, and is anyone familiar with that program?
No.
It's a program in New York specifically targeted to people with mental illness, and it's kind of all-inclusive. It's housing, but it's also support services, and then it's kind of like a training ground for the residents who actually sort of have a residence committee that operates the housing, but also there's vocational training modules within that where they can learn, you know, various skills that would then be marketable. It's been pretty successful. It's been used with that. It initially was used with people with mental illness, but also has been replicated for people with traumatic brain injury as not only a housing but a service delivery model. And I'm just wondering if we might look at something like that. The only drawback would be that I guess it's, you know, it's kind of segregated, but it is consumer directed.
Yeah, and it is active. I just found their website, which is real current.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue that we were bumping up against with the parents of children with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Right.
Where the current Medicaid waivers don't recognize group housing with five or more people. And so it's this tension between integration and at the same time allowing consumers to choose their housing setting.
And, you know, I think that I probably should have mentioned that at the beginning of this discussion that given the feedback we did receive at the December 5th meeting from members of the public, that can also be, I think, a point of discussion in this conference call and maybe in future conference calls because it is a big issue. Donnie makes a great point that in our first biennial planning effort, we made a definition for service-enriched housing that, you know, I guess made it a point of saying integrated housing what we were looking for. Now, it sounds like from some of the feedback we have received is that there is a feeling by certain stakeholders that integration is not necessarily a requirement to them for community-based living. And like you said, parents of persons with intellectual or developmental disabilities have seemed to be the group that is most vocal about that perspective.
Well, I think that's where the absence is most notable. And the phrase that was used repeatedly at the last meeting was this continuum of care. And for older persons, in terms of housing, there is a true continuum. There are adult foster care facilities for, you know, three or four people. There are assisted living facilities that may house up to, you know, 100, 200 people. But yet, for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities, there's this huge gap between housing for no more than four people or housing in a state-supported living center. And there's really nothing that the waivers recognize in between those two extremes.
Okay. Well, that's certainly something that I can, you know, talk more with perhaps, you know, Jonas and Steve, if you're both still on the phone, maybe about the genesis of Medicaid waivers and the discussion around what the waivers recognize for community-based housing.
I'm happy to have that conversation with you.
Yeah, I think CMS is really opposed to segregated housing. They do recognize assisted living. I don't think they like it that much, but it just seems ironic to me that with other types of disabilities, we truly allow the consumer to choose. And for folks with IDD or their families, you know, pardon the pun, but it's like you're not smart enough to know what's good for you. And you know, that just, it seems like there's a real disconnect there between the different waivers.
And, you know, I think that brings up another point that, you know, I've heard from SAMHSA that, you know, in terms of the what they have promoted and, you know, they have a fidelity model for housing. And it seems as though SAMHSA is not as opposed, I guess, to this type of housing model. So it's interesting to me that CMS and SAMHSA maybe aren't exactly on the same page.
But isn't SAMHSA looking at more transitional housing than actually assisted living, not long-term?
I thought that they were talking about permanent supportive housing when I had heard from, was it Ann Denton? Who was it? I think it was Ann Denton that had been working on their fidelity model, and it was a permanent supportive housing fidelity model.
Okay, maybe permanent supportive and transitional. And transitional is you know, 2 years at least, you know, that's 2 years. So that's still a pretty long time.
Well, it'll be an interesting conversation because it'll run against, you know, certainly current TDHCA policy on their integration rule, as well as, you know, the DAW that's stood pretty firm on that and Olmstead. So that's a tough battle.
Yeah, and there were proposed rules that were put out by CMS a year ago or more now, and they further wanted a comment on defining housing and waiver services. And so now...
Proposed rule on, was it on the waivers?
Yes.
Okay.
And so what I'll do, Ashley, is I can send you that rule set and the comments that Texas provided, because Steve and Mark commented, there were several things in these proposed rules, housing only being one.
Yeah.
Steve and Mark provided really good, thorough comments around, you know, the fact that in Texas, you know, assisted living for waiver services is considered a viable housing option.
Yeah, and the walkaway I get from Olmstead is that it's wrong to limit services to institutional settings, that really does constitute discrimination. But I think the request that the parents are making is give us a choice. You know, Olmstead didn't say that institutional care was illegal, but that it was illegal to restrict long-term services and supports to institutional settings only.
Well, and that's the heart of the matter for me, and really taking the independent living philosophy to its full extent, to insist that all housing be integrated does take away an option that some people with disabilities may actually prefer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that that's really the best way to proceed, you know?
Okay. I I hear what you're saying. I think that this is going to be an ongoing conversation. I also think it will be very important for me to take your feedback to the Housing Committee, as I know that there are people on that committee that may have a differing viewpoint or may just want to provide further discussion on the item.
Right.
So thank you for that. I think I will definitely bring that back. And Jonas, thank you for in advance for providing those comments. I will look into them.
And Ashley, if you want to have further discussion about this offline, I'm happy to do that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jonas. Okay, well, why don't we move on to the second item, which was the providing comprehensive service funding, which was obviously Jonas has already kind of mentioned the item about Medicaid waiver services for persons with mental illness. And then there was another also comment about community-based prevention and early intervention services that the stakeholder felt was lacking. But I guess we can have also a discussion about what kind of barriers and obstacles do we see to providing comprehensive service funding in a community-based setting? That's a big item, I know. But I think we can get the juices flowing on.
Trying to get my head around it.
And actually, does that pertain to the NY population specifically?
Well, the stakeholders that provided feedback to us on the online discussion forum did make it specific to persons with mental illness. I don't think that we necessarily have to do so as a committee. I think we can all agree that right now in the state of Texas, the amount of community-based services currently available may not be as comprehensive as we would ideally like. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely a good statement.
Okay, all right. Starting with
get the award, Ashley, for diplomacy.
Given that we agree on that fact, where do we do? I mean, one thing that we can certainly talk about is that there were a set of policy recommendations we made in the first biennial plan, and maybe the way that we tackle this one is going through those and saying, have we made any progress on these? And if not, what is our challenge to the legislature for the next session?
And Ashley, make a note, would you, because there is a lot of discussion internally in Medicaid right now.
Okay.
Looking at the long-term services and supports provisions that are made available to states through the Affordable Care Act. And so I think that during our next report, we're going to want to reference that.
Okay.
Because it's about the three provisions in the Affordable Care Act all revolve around allowing people to be in the community with the services and supports that they need and having better access to the services that they need.
Okay.
So my point is, in our next biennial report, we'll want to reference that as something that's on the horizon that we'll have to pay attention to.
And I know that HHSC was tasked with, you know, breaking down that large piece of document, that large piece of policy document, and making, I guess, I don't know if HHSC was asked to make recommendations to the legislature or if they were just asked to explain it.
Well, I mean, we have broken down that policy document, and we are having discussions internally, and we will be making recommendations around those pieces of the ACA that we think we can implement, and we'll make recommendations to do that. Now, we're still having internal discussions and we're not ready to, we're not at the recommendation stage yet, but we're close. And by recommendations, I mean to our leadership about how they want to proceed.
Okay. Will you keep us updated on that? Because I think that what will be really great for us is to be able to see, once those recommendations are made, I'm guessing, to your commission, what those are.
Yes, I will.
Okay, that will be fantastic.
So my point is, while I'm thinking about it, just make a note, because that is something that we'll want to reference as we go forward.
Sure, sure. And so is there a particular person that if I had any follow-up questions about the act, that I could contact there?
Me.
Okay. I will ask you then. Okay. And then I guess the third item that came up in the discussion forum was the education piece that stakeholders talked about. They talked about education of legislators. They talked about education of property managers. They talked about education of the general public. But I think that the idea was that obviously we still have the not in my backyard item to contend with in terms of the public and others perhaps not understanding fully what service-enriched housing is. And what will happen if service-enriched housing is placed in their community. So that was something that was presented by the public or by the stakeholders as feedback in terms of needing a greater education. I don't know if where we want to go with that. Any ideas?
Hard to know where to begin on that.
Yeah. Well, is this something that we feel can be combated with legislation? Is it something that's just more about the rules and regulations of internally by state agencies?
You know, I've heard it said you can't legislate acceptance.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Is it something that is perhaps a perhaps it's a component of what Donnie was talking about with the outreach then?
Yeah, because I think, and it's been a long time since I've looked at this issue, but I think that there is already policy and state statute on the books around this issue, and so we might want to take, you know, one of our conference calls and just look at the statute that's on the books and the policy, because I know there are people at TDHTA that know that well, and then, you know, decide if there is an education component or maybe a policy change that we want to recommend.
And I will say that, you know, I think that this does relate to fair housing.
Yeah.
And that currently, for those of you who may not know, our agency is updating our analysis of impediments to fair housing. And so we have a fair housing coordinator and soon to be employing a fair housing specialist under that coordinator that are managing a contract we have with an outside vendor that has experience creating AIs, as they're called. And so, you know, perhaps maybe this falls in line with looking at the feedback that we received during this update of our analysis of impediments to fair housing. because we're going out for, well, our vendor's going out for a lot of outreach to the public. We'll be holding, you know, both online and in-person discussions with members of the public across the state on issues of fair housing. So I'm wondering if maybe that's the course we take here, is to utilize the feedback that they receive.
I think that's an excellent thing to do, because it's taking advantage of an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
And we can just, you know, talk about that and the recommendations that come out of that from in our report, because I think, you know, the thing that we have to be careful of is not getting too many issues on our plates that take us in several different directions.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Sure. And I guess that you know, I think this is for another meeting, but I think that we've already come up with a lot of things to research, and maybe the next meeting we can talk about priorities,
mm-hmm.
And what is most important to fit into this 2012-2013 biennial plan on the services side. So I will make sure that I make that a point of discussion, and maybe provide a couple of leading questions for all of you for that next meeting. Okay. Well, I think that's good for the discussion forum responses. And I certainly have received a lot of staff research assignments through that conversation. Is there anything additional in terms of staff research assignments to discuss? All right. Then I guess the next thing is, next steps for the committee would just be the next committee meeting is Wednesday, February 1st, 10 a.m. I will send out all the details in advance. Do we want to come back to that first item of the appointment of committee chair? Anyone want to nominate themselves or someone? Really, there's not a whole lot to it.
Yeah, a little silent there. He's not with us today.
I'm happy to do it if nobody else.
Jonas, you're the best.
So.
I vote for Jonas.
Jonas remembers being a committee chair before. There isn't too much responsibility.
but. Ashley, you need a go-to person so the work can get done. That's what's important.
That's right. You're going to be the taskmaster for the committee.
Oh.
All right. Well, thank you, Jonas, for nominating yourself. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We do, too.
Okay, great. Thank you guys so much. And you'll be hearing from me with the research that we've started to discuss, and also your draft budget recommendations.
Sounds good.
Great.
Right. Thank you, guys.
Sounds very good. Bye. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Talk to you in a couple weeks.